Welcome once again to Leto's Law. Here's Steve Leto.
Whole bunch of people sent me a story about the Institute for Justice with another big victory. And this one is huge, huge. Police did tens of thousands of dollars in damage to a woman's house. Now she got them to pay for it all via an interesting legal theory, eminent domain. And so we've heard about people whose homes were damaged by the police as they were executing some kind of legal action. And they later say, well, sorry, we wrecked your house, but oh well. And there's the example, for instance, the SWAT team that damaged that person's house when they were chasing down a shoplifter who'd stolen a belt. And they basically destroyed the house. Oh, sorry, but we had to do it. We were trying to catch that shoplifter. So in this case, it's in Texas. And the police in Texas use governmental immunity to avoid repaying taxpayers for damaging their property. But there's now a new play in the playbook. Author Matt Howerton wrote the story. And Vicki Baker is 78 years old. Now, she's beaten cancer, so she's willing to put up a fight. Simply put, she knows what it's like to plant your feet, stand tall, and fight. So it's no surprise her name is connected to a landmark federal court win that ordered the city of McKinney to pay her nearly $60,000 for destroying most of her home while chasing a wanted man. Throughout the country, state and federal judges almost always side with the police and governmental agencies when they cite sovereign or governmental immunity claims for damages to property. So they say, look, we destroyed your property, but we had to as part of our job, and therefore you can't sue us. So Baker, the woman here, and her attorneys from the Institute used a novel legal approach to sidestep governmental immunity claims, and the legal argument resonated with the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. So right now, this would be a good way to handle a case like this in the Fifth Circuit, but other circuits, people should be trying this to see if they can get this across the country. The Fifth Circuit found the city of McKinney, which is a governmental entity, must pay an innocent property owner whose property was damaged or destroyed by police. Now, the city is challenging the decision, not commenting at this time, but Baker and her attorneys are talking, and they think their case could possibly land up at the U.S. Supreme Court. And if it does and they win, it would become the law of the land. So right now, there are people in Texas who are saying, we should appeal this. We don't like this ruling. And there are people in every other circuit going, don't appeal it. Leave the bad case law where you are. Now, I think it's good case law, but all the municipalities around the country are going to dislike this law. I believe we won because God is on our side, Baker told WFAA, who reported this story. I truly don't know how they've been getting away with this all these years. So back in 2020, the woman owned a home off of Vista Verde Trail, and the house is nestled in a quiet and respectful neighborhood of the city. That day, she was in her new Montana home, so she bought a home, was preparing to move, while her daughter remained in the Vista Verde property. House had been on the market, and a sale was on the verge of being finalized. So she's in the process of selling the house. On that day, a contractor and a handyman that this woman knew had fled inside her home to take refuge after kidnapping a 15-year-old child. So the woman's daughter was startled when that happened, but the daughter escaped the home while the other person stayed inside the house with the teenager who they'd kidnapped. Once she left the house, the daughter called 911. Police quickly surrounded the home and attempted to negotiate with the man. They eventually got him to let the teenager go, but he himself would not come out. So SWAT then proceeded to head on in. And of course, when they do that, it is with a very, very heavy hand. Baker told WFAA the damage to the home was extensive. They used tear gas canisters, and they blew the garage door off with something else. The canisters were shot through the windows, the roof, the walls. A SWAT vehicle also mowed over her fence. When police made entry into the home, they discovered that the man inside had passed away at his own hand. By the time the police left the area, there was more than $50,000 in damage to the house. And she says she thinks it was closer to $70,000. So she had to pay out of pocket to get everything fixed. A hazmat crew had to dispose of anything in the house that was dangerous, and that involved quite a bit of stuff because of all the tear gas. She told the TV station that nearly every window in the home had to be replaced, as well as the front door and the garage door. She added that appliances, flooring, fencing, it all had to be repaired. And of course, the house still smelled of tear gas. On top of that, their dog was severely injured in the event. So she eventually sold the property after she made all the repairs, but her insurance company would not cover all the damage. They only covered the repairs done by the woman herself. So there were a bunch of things they did not cover. So she was left hurting after all this happened. So her insurance company told her, they told me they didn't pay for an act of government. So it's like an act of God, an act of government. So she filed a property damage claim with the city of McKinney, and they refused to reimburse her, claiming sovereign or governmental immunity, and stated that the officers and department were protected from damage claims for simply doing their jobs. They were simply doing their jobs. And this is one of those things that I think 99.9% of all people who hear these stories will tell you, is they go, wait a second. The woman's house got destroyed through no fault of her own. She is 100% innocent here. And her house gets destroyed. But we don't have to take care of it, even though we destroyed it, because we had a good reason to destroy it. We're trying to get that guy out of there. And most people look at that and go, that's not right. That's not right. Why wouldn't they fix that? They broke it. You know, you broke it, you bought it. Why wouldn't they fix that? Because they don't have to. Governmental immunity. So the woman then turned to the Institute for Justice and began a civil battle in court that resulted in her victory last summer. And the strategy they used is one many property owners wish they knew in their court battles to defeat sovereign or governmental immunity. When damage occurs during the scope of an investigation, law enforcement may claim immunity under the old English legal concept of sovereign immunity, meaning that you can't sue the king, okay? Time and time again, state agencies and cities have made sovereign and governmental immunity claims to shield law enforcement and other agencies from financial and legal losses. They also make these claims to make sure a department or agency isn't hamstrung from doing the scope of their responsibilities. In 2020, WFAA focused on the police powers used in three unique cases in Texas and Colorado. In the three cases involving two families and a business owner, they found their property was severely damaged or destroyed by law enforcement, but received little or no compensation due to the immunity defense. So if law enforcement or other governmental entities damage your property, their liability is limited, i.e., you get nothing. Victims often lawyer up and take their claims to court, but state and federal judges almost always side with agencies or police due to the governmental immunity defense. So in Texas, the state can't be sued successfully without consent from the legislature. And under Texas law, the legislature doesn't admit liability by granting permission to sue. Because these protections are in place, a claimant's shot of winning in court is often low. However, an attorney stepped into the case here, and he won because he didn't challenge governmental immunity. The real strategy here was to avoid immunity entirely, he said. Our whole theory here is that this was a taking under the takings clause, just like eminent domain. And so what we're talking about eminent domain is the idea that occasionally the government has got to take your property. And the best example I can give you is suppose there is a highway that comes along here and it stops and it restarts here and goes like this. And somebody goes, well, we really ought to connect this highway right here, but there's a bunch of homes here. Well, they can say, guess what? To complete this highway, we're going to buy these homes from their owners, compensate them for the homes, and then tell them they got to move. Sorry. And it's not fun if you got to move out of your house, but it happens. And so I can point to a dozen examples in Michigan where during my life, they have completed a road or a highway and done it by taking property through eminent domain, and they take the property, they compensate the owners, and owners leave. Might not like it, but they leave, but they get compensated. And so the whole question is, are you suing them, that is the police department, because of their actions? Because if you're suing them because of their actions, they get immunity because they're allowed to do their job. That's the thinking. Or are you suing them because they took your property for the public good? And if there's a bad guy in the house, it's in the public good to get that bad guy out of there and get him into police custody or to stop him doing what he's doing. And so if we wind up taking the house in that process, it's eminent domain. We are taking the house for the public good. Eminent domain cases say the owner of the property gets compensated. And I've had people say, by the way, I've been doing these cases now and stories on my channel about various times where the government's taken something from somebody. And I've had people say, Steve, why don't they approach it through, you know, a Fifth Amendment taking argument? And I believe that some of these arguments have been tried before, but they've never succeeded. And this is apparently the first time it's succeeded that we know of. The takings clause is pivotal in many of these cases where eminent domain is used. The attorney and fellow counsel argued that the city, they did have a right to take the woman's home during their raid for public use, but that she should be compensated under the Fifth Amendment, which says that if they take it from you, they've got to pay you for it. The courts have said when the government takes your property intentionally for public use, you get compensated. That's her attorney speaking. And a jury heard this case, and a jury agreed. So I'll let you know right now that one of the ways they kind of got lucky here is a lot of times the defendants will come into court before trial and ask the court to summarily dismiss the case and throw it out and say there's nothing to put to a jury here because we've got an absolute bar to the action with our immunity. And apparently a judge here said, well, no, it's not an immunity question. It's a takings question under eminent domain. So we'll send that to the jury and see what they think. And the jury said, yeah, pay the woman. So her win is the first time a federal court has ruled that the Fifth Amendment requires a governmental entity to pay an innocent property owner whose property was damaged or destroyed by police. So the attorney is hopeful that other attorneys will see the success of this case and use it as a blueprint to make innocent victims whole. He also thinks this kind of issue involving sovereign and governmental immunity as opposed to eminent domain will wind up before the U.S. Supreme Court. By the way, the woman points out to the news here that one of the reasons that she's upset by this is that they are spending so much money defending the case when they could have just paid her. And I pointed that before, that quite often they fight these cases and spend more defending them than they would have paid if they'd paid it. And they'll say, well, we're doing it on principle. Okay. She said, they've got the money because they're fighting you with it. Why not give that money to individuals that they've harmed? So this is a huge case. This is a huge, huge result. This is a fabulous victory for people in general. And one thing I've got to tell you, as I always do, the Institute for Justice is a nonprofit organization who often step in and help the quote-unquote little guy fight Goliath. And many of the cases we're talking about require you to finance your own litigation. And so if you've got to hire an attorney with your own money to chase down a claim, if this claim is for $50,000, how much money will you spend to get your $50,000 back? And I've had people say, Steve, as a matter of principle, I'd do it. Oh, but you have $50,000 lying around to finance your litigation to get your $50,000 back? And on a matter of principle, you'll break even when you win and you'll be happy? And don't get me wrong, that's perfectly viable. But most people haven't got the money laying around to hire an attorney and chase something like this, which might turn out to be a boondoggle, or it might just wind up going through the court system and appeals and appeals. And so the Institute for Justice, a nonprofit supported by people like you and me, they step in and take these cases on and they do the heavy lifting. And they are often handling cases like this where you read it and go, oh my gosh, this woman has really been wronged and she should be compensated. You know, I hope someone can step in and help her. Boom, Institute for Justice stepped in. But again, They're not just doing this to help the one person. Don't get me wrong, I'm sure they'd step in and do it even if it only did help one person. But by getting this case and pushing it through the court system, and especially the other side starts filing appeals, if they keep winning, it's going to create good case law. If they lose, well, they're back where they started. But the point is that they take on these cases that most people cannot afford to take on. So they are supported through the generosity of people who hear about them and go, you know something? I like the work they do. So whenever I do a story where I talk about the Institute for Justice, I always mention, I'll put a link to them in the description below the video. Click on it, read the site, look at the cases they handle, and ask yourself if they're not doing the work that ought to be done, because I believe they are. And if you can support them in any way, shape, or form, send them a couple bucks, it all adds up. And one thing I will tell you, I have spoken to people at the Institute for Justice. When I first started talking about them a couple of years ago, I got a note from them saying, Dear Mr. Leto, we've got a surge of people who donated to us, who said specifically that they heard about us through your channel on YouTube. And I said, oh, thank you. It's good to know that people are listening. And so I've gotten a few notes over the years from them thanking me and saying, you know, hey, Steve, we got another flurry of donations, a bunch more activity and correspondence. And people are saying that it's because they heard about a case that we handled on your channel. So I have no problem supporting them. I think they're doing great work. And one thing I got to tell you, I do a lot of lemon law. Lemon law is if you buy a brand new vehicle, it's so defective that the dealership can't repair it, and the manufacturer's got to buy it back from you. Those cases in Michigan, there's a statute that has what's called a fee-shifting statute, where you can actually make the manufacturer pay my attorney fees on your behalf if we win. So I take these cases and tell my clients, look, it's not going to cost you anything. And cases where you are completely right should be that way, but they're not. America follows what's called the American rule, where I pay my attorney fees on my side, you pay them on your side, unless there's a fee-shifting statute, which is not that common. So the tricky part is that a lot of these cases, there are no fee-shifting statutes saying that if you sue somebody under the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution, you get your attorney fees paid. That's not how that works. So that's one of the reasons that the defendants can dig their heels in on these and fight them tooth and nail, knowing that the average person cannot afford the litigation. And so guess what happens when somebody from the Institute for Justice files an appearance and says, oh, we're handling the case now. And I wish I could be there, like a fly on the wall, when somebody makes that phone call or when somebody opens up the envelope that's got the appearance in it and it says, we're now appearing on behalf of the plaintiff in this case. Just to let you know, we'll see you in court. Because you know darn well that it went from being a turkey shoot to being a struggle that now both sides are evenly matched with respect to litigation ability. And that to me is huge. And so we don't get to see that moment. We don't get to be the fly on the wall, but we can imagine it. So it's a great case and a great outcome. But from WFAA, Matt Howerton wrote this, and pretty much everybody in the face of the earth sent it to me, so thank you very much. Police did tens of thousands of dollars in damage to the woman's home, and she got them to pay for it all via eminent domain. That's the legal theory going forward. Questions or comments, put them below. Others will talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Thank you for watching Leto's Law. I travel because I'd rather look back at my life saying, I can't believe I did that, instead of, if only I had.